Blog Talk Radio.
Professor Applewhite, and welcome to the Student to Teacher to Student Show. And we really thank you for joining us this morning. We've got a second part of a topic that we've been dealing with, using drugs to feel good at school and work. But I just wanted to explain to you why there are times when why we call the show Student to Teacher. And that is because there are times when we play the part of the student and we play the part of the teacher all throughout our lives. And so we want to make sure that you understand that today you may be the student or today you may be the teacher. So please feel free to call us at 1-646-727-3758. And you can either listen in on the show or you can participate. And if you participate on the show, that makes you a teacher. It really does, unless you are, of course, asking a question. But teachers ask questions too. And that's how we learn. Or sometimes we're just quiet and we just absorb the information that's shared with us, and that makes us a student. But both things, you see, have this agreement with each other that I'm a student now, but I'm a teacher in the next few moments. And it's an ongoing process of learning. So we thank you so much for joining us this morning, and we really appreciate the music from Nazim Rashid's album River Nile. And you can get that on Amazon if you enjoy that music. I will be following up on his show. He's doing an interview on self-esteem this morning. His show starts at 11 to 12, and it's called Reconnected. And you can find that on our actual show list. So getting back to the business at hand, we have one of our callers online right now. And we'll say good morning. This is Professor Applewhite.
Yeah, this is Tom. I was going to talk a little about addiction today.
Tom, our vice president and of student operations, and we really appreciate you being here. And I'll tell you something. If you want to hear someone really speak from just about every venue that White Apple Institute services, Tom is your all-around guy because he's been there and he's dealt with not only mental illness and the factor of the challenge of disability with people who do not understand, and he is an advocate. He's also our tutor for those that get stuck on math issues. Most importantly, he's dealt with addiction, which is applicable to today. So he's going to have some really great information for us. And we'll have other callers as they call in this morning. We encourage you. As I saw last week, we had like 40 people on the switchboard, Tom, and they did not participate by saying anything. And we just want to encourage you. I promise you, you'll feel very, very enlightened and confident if you speak up on our show, because you can guarantee that. There's been a lot of growth, a lot of people who have listened to our show off and on, for the last almost 2 years now, and have experienced growth. One Maria, right, Tom?
Right.
She's been
getting
just,
ready to go to school.
Yes, she's getting ready to enter the doors of college, community college, which is just a great step for any adult to make. We look at adults at, we start looking at our students at 17 years old on up to, 60, 65 years old. We've had students that have come to us looking for a way to finish a degree, improve themselves at work, find a job, and they need that emotional support going on. And sometimes with needing that emotional support, they look to other things to help them. And that's what our topic is about today, using drugs to feel good at school and work. And that means in addition to feel good at school and work is to feel good in the preparation to get it together to go to school, to go to college, and or workforce training program, or actually go into a job and continue that job. Whether you perceive yourself as disabled or disadvantaged or not, this is a challenge to get up every morning, especially when you feel that your pay is not worthy enough for you, or when you feel that the job has changed since you first took it on. That's not a real happy feeling when they start changing rules on you. It's like a nightmare of a bad marriage, you know. And so we are here to support you. That's what we do, not only on the show, student-teacher show, but by our sponsor, White Apple Institute. We're here to support you getting to that point where you feel good, and not only where you feel good about school and work, but to support you through the process. And we do this whether we have one client or 100 clients. The same attention is given. Because we've been there, too. Have you been there? Have you been there?
Yes, I've been there.
Listeners, you've been there.
Yeah, I've been a student. I've also been an addict and disabled. Mm. I was going to briefly mention a thing called endomorphins. They're a chemical in your brain that makes you feel better. Okay,
yes.
And one example is if you've ever exercised for any period of time, your body produces endorphins and makes you feel better. And many of our addictions like coffee, cigarettes, cocaine, what have you, makes your body produce more endorphins than it normally needs to. And it makes
you
feel good,
that.
And you can get addicted.
Yes. We're going to remember endomorphins. Write that down, listeners out there that are listening to the show for class credit or whatever, just for your own knowledge. And we want you to know that we're trying very, very hard to make sure this information goes out with clarity. We want you to know that when we talk about these are pretty big words we're using, these endomorphins, but we're just talking about the fluid that runs through your brain, okay? And it's called, there are different types of fluid, and they're called by different names, okay? So that's what Tom was just referencing. I'm going to read the description of the show this morning so that we get a pretty good idea of what we're going to be talking about. If you don't have a computer in front of you, you can at least follow along with what I'm going to say to you. Today's description is that Professor Applewhite and the staff of White Apple Institute continue to discuss the impact of drugs on performance. Energy drinks, coffee drinkers, smokers, street and prescribed drug consumers will be amazed at the information we're going to share with you today. You can also hear our discussions in the archive show section. So if you missed part of the show today and you want to go back or you want to share this show with someone else, you can go to the computer and put in blogtalkradio.com student2teacher. So student2teacher. And you'll pick up our broadcast and you can listen to it anytime. This is a great way of teaching in group sessions in classrooms. So we hope that the teachers out there listening to us, I know we have a group in India that at an orphanage that works with 17-year-olds getting ready to transition out into the community, and they have them sit and listen to the show. So we wish you well at Grace Orphanage in India, and thank you so much for the support for our show today and for our friends in Nigeria and China that continue to connect with us through email. And we just can't say how what a joy it is to help you. Well, we hope this information will help you out some. Let me share this with you for a moment, is that addictions are psychological, and addictions are also physiological. Now, what that means is that what enhances something going on in your body, like Tom was talking about earlier, the endomorphins, those are chemicals that run through the fluid that runs through your brain. And that becomes a physical addiction. But the same endomorphins are also fueled or motivated by things like gambling, addiction to gambling, addiction to pornographic materials, whether they're on internet or in magazines. There are a lot of people that are addicted to pornographic materials. Did you know that, Tom?
Yeah, I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
They've discovered that people that are addicted have a different chemical makeup than people
mm-hmm.
who watch them and don't become addicted. There's actually something different about the chemicals and the neurotransmitters, which I'll let her explain, in the brain. And they can become addicted to things that aren't necessarily substances, like you think of coffee, cocaine, beer, alcohol as being addicting, but also there can be things that are psychologically addicting, like gambling, where there's no drug you take, but you're still addicted to it.
Right. Exactly, because somewhere along the line, there is something that's missing somewhere, okay? And it can be filled up, again, back to the endomorphins, it can be filled up by doing something that makes you feel like you've got this great adrenaline rush, an adrenaline rush that makes you feel good. Okay, and you want to do more of it because it makes you feel good. Where after a while, after you start feeling really good doing whatever you're doing, whether it's a shot of alcohol or torting cocaine or smoking a marijuana joint or a cigarette, you want that feeling to come back again and again and again. The human being is designed to seek out happiness and joy and peace. That's the design, the creative design of our Creator, if you will. And when we say that we wish each other much love and peace, we wish each other happiness. We wish each other joy. And we hope that this individual will find those things and things that are constructive for them. Because that's where we miss sometimes, is that, yeah, I'll be fine, I'll be happy because I'm going home and I'm going to have, you know, a couple of shots of vodka and then I'll feel much better. Or one that's come up lately, two, as a matter of fact, that have come up lately, listeners, is video games and the addiction to video games and the addiction to exercise. You know, we all know that there's an addiction to food also. You know, food has an addiction, sex has an addiction, as we mentioned earlier, not just pornographic material, but the overwhelming need to engage in sexual acts without responsible behavior. And so that leads us into really what addiction is when you think about it. It's that we're not taking responsibility for what's going to hurt us. We know, most of us know, that if we eat when we're not hungry and we feel so full that it almost makes you feel like you don't even want to hold on to the food that you have eaten. You know you've had enough. When you're gambling and everything becomes a gamble, you're challenged at every point. Someone says, let's throw some dice. Let's play a game of poker in the home or in the casino. And the only thing that turns you on about it is if you have the money laying on the table and these things start rushing your adrenaline and cause something called dopamine, which is another one of those names for fluids in your brain, that creates this desire to do it again. And dopamine, or the happy hormone that our creator has already put in our body, is offset by another one called serotonin. So we have the serotonin levels that are in our body that make us feel, calmer. And these drugs, or in more complicated terms, neurotransmitters, make us relax a little bit more. But they're there for purpose. They're there for balance. Balance is the key. Do you agree, listeners? Tom, do you agree?
I do. I definitely agree.
Yeah. When when I think about food and exercise and all the things that are not about taking in a street drug, because most of the time when you say addiction, people automatically go to, the street drugs out there, methamphetamine, and as we spoke about last week, they go to the drugs that are extremely harmful instead of the ones that sneak up on us in the morning with that cup of coffee. You agree?
Yeah, I do. It's people know that cocaine is going to hurt them. Some people choose to do it anyway. But a cup of coffee, a lot of times you get started by thinking, a cup of coffee won't hurt me. And then you get in the habit and you get addicted to it. And for some people, they get terrible headaches if they miss their coffee. And side effects, your body telling you really don't need that much of a drug, but yeah, you're addicted to it, so you keep using it, and it becomes a vicious cycle that's hard to break.
Right. Absolutely. It is a vicious cycle, because as I was mentioning earlier, you start off with once or twice doing it, and then all of a sudden, you're doing it on a constant level to bring yourself to remember the first time you did it and that wonderful feeling that you may have had when you did it. Now, there's some people that say they never got a wonderful feeling at all, and they stay away from it. You'll hear people say, it didn't do anything for me. No, I don't smoke marijuana because it makes me feel paranoid. It makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't get into drinking liquor because it makes me sick to my stomach. There's a lot of people out there. What scientists have always been baffled about since the beginning of looking at addiction And I've got a surprise to tell the audience out there. But, and don't let me forget now, Tom, because I've got a great surprise. I think it's going to make people really think harder about addiction than they ever have before. But I want to tell you that scientists really ponder why some people become addicted after one snort of cocaine, after a smoke of a cigarette or a shot of heroin or, you know, or a street drug, any street drug out there, and then others do not. What is that battle? What is the answer to that puzzle? Any of our listeners that want to call in to 1-646-727-3758 and expound a little bit on what you feel the reason may be for that.
Well,
but Tom, you have any ideas about why some people can?
Well, some people have receptors in the brain that, like for tobacco, there are receptors in your brain that receive tobacco. And some people have more of them than others, and brains are wired differently. They're all a little different chemically. So that may be one reason that people become addicted to alcohol. Some people do and others don't. May simply be their brains are wired differently. In other words, God made mm-hmm. each individual brain different from the other ones, and she can expound on this next one. Some people have what they call an addictive personality disorder, where they tend to become psychologically addicted very easily to something.
Sorry for that interruption. I'm going to pick up where we were talking about genetic predisposition, and we were saying that we're answering this question that's baffled scientists from since the beginning of recognizing what addiction is. And that question is why do some people become addicted quickly and other people can do the same drug or behavior and not become addicted. And what they found, bottom line, which Tom elaborated on, is that many people, their brains are not wired in that direction where they become susceptible or open to being addicted on alcohol or anything else in that matter. But look into your lives a little bit. Look into your lives a little further and make sure that you don't have anything that controls you, because that's really what we're talking about when we talk about addiction. We're talking about what controls your behavior. So what do we mean when we say controls your behavior? I mean, that's a good question there. What do we mean when we say this controls your behavior?
Well, I think of, this is Tom again, I think of a big one is caffeine or cocaine. They race the endomorphins again, which we discussed earlier, in the brain and make you feel better. And then you get to where your brain starts to become immune and need more and more of the same stimulus. And then without it, you feel really bad. And that's basically how I would explain addictions.
Right, right. This control issue, though, when we speak about control, we're saying that you can't, and a perfect example, and just look at yourself in front of your children or your students, listeners. How many times have you said, I need my cup of coffee, okay? I need to get a cup of coffee in order to wake up or get going this morning. Or I need an energy drink, you know, whether it's the Monster or the Red Bull. How many times in the evening do you go home and say, I need a drink, and pour a vodka? And remember, while doing all of this, that you may be modeling behavior for someone else. But you have no control over it. I've had many people say, well, it's something that I want. I'm not addicted to it. I just want it. Well, then if that's a fact, then you can go without it. Try going without the behavior or the drug. We have a caller here. Hello, Maria.
How are you, Ms. Papa?
Good morning. It's so good to hear your voice. So very good to hear your voice. We're talking now about, we're finishing up part two from last week's Using Drugs to Feel Good. I don't know how much you've been able to hear about the show, but we're going a little bit deeper now into how the control happens, and we're bringing up a few more things, and I've got a surprise for our listeners out there about the research that I found. Now, we were just talking about why some people are addicted, get addicted real quickly, and others don't get addicted at all when they try something. But here's one, a question. When we talk about addiction to exercise, can you imagine what I'm talking about here? An addiction to exercise?
Yeah, that's
exercise
true.
Is good for us, right?
Right, yes.
So how could it be an addiction?
You can exercise to the point of injuring yourself.
Right, too much.
Right.
Too much.
Injuring yourself or doing it so much that it raises that, going back to the earlier part of our show, we're talking about endorphins or chemicals in our body that our Creator has already placed there. Okay, because God created this perfect design. And then when we go into what we do with that perfect design, not just in this term of life, but what our ancestors started eating and doing that may have become an addiction to us psychologically. In our mind, it becomes an addiction, and then in our body, in our genes, becomes an addiction. So this exercise, and I knew one of my students was very much into this. Every time you turned around and looked, she was she could not stop exercising. She would go to the point of exhaustion. Now, you might look at somebody like the tennis players, the two sisters that play tennis. What is it, Vanessa and Venus? Is it
Venus? Venus, yeah.
Right, Venus. Now, they have to practice so many hours. But I remember them once saying in an interview that they know when to stop. And I think that's, I guess that's really what's sticking in my mind about this whole question of are we addicted to something or are we not? That may affect our performance. Our performance on the job or at school. If you need something in order to keep going, and we have a listener online in the background, you might want to mute your phone if you're working with dishes or whatever because it's coming across the line, or minimize the movement so that all listeners can get a really good idea of the show. But, you know, it's really funny that, you know, exercise, when I saw exercise on there, I understood every other addiction, gambling, the porno films, the porno magazines, the video games. I've seen the addiction to video games. You know, I've seen it with my own grandchildren. You know, that everything in their life is boring unless they have a video game. Okay? And so we've forgotten how to interact with each other. And, okay, are you ready for this? We have forgotten how to feed off of each other in a positive way. When you're talking about in the 1950s and before, people talked to each other. They had a social network unlike Facebook, but a real social network where people touched each other and danced and ate together. This is becoming a thing of the past now. Do you realize that?
Very much so.
Yes.
I think when television came along, kids started watching TV more. Now with the new games, people do that. We tend not to socialize with our neighbors. We also choose houses and stuff. A lot of people do, where they don't have to see the neighbors around them. I used to have a house. I chose it for economic reasons, but I had a house that had real high fences, 7 feet tall. So you couldn't see your neighbors around you. You know, and people tend to stay in the house and play video games, and they, like you said, they don't communicate. When I used to live on the Air Force Base when I was a little boy, we used to go down to friends' houses in the neighborhood all the time, and they didn't have those brick walls, and everybody knew everybody, and we used to visit with each other more. I think that's part of the reason that the divorce rate's hovering right around 53-54% of marriages in divorce, and I think that's because we're losing the socialization skills that we once practiced.
Wow, that's quite a profound statement, Tom. You're absolutely right. I mean, I didn't even connect the divorce rate to that. Thank you for bringing that out, because addictions have a lot to do with the divorce rates. I was just speaking to somebody. Usually, you know, it's alcohol, but there are other things, especially the pornography that's on the internet. You know, that's been a real big cause of divorce lately. And when we're talking about people that perceive themselves, we know that there are disabilities. We know that there is an ability that all of us have. Okay, all of us have abilities, period. And some of us have more or different abilities than others, okay? So we recognize that if we're in a wheelchair, we're not going to climb certain things, we're not going to do certain things, but we can do other things, and that's why we try to take away the perception of the woe is me, I'm disabled. That's what White Apple Institute really tries hard to do, is that we're not going to feed into saying, well, because you have a disability, you can't do anything. You can always go to college. You can always join the workforce at different levels. Wasn't it, you know, so when we talk about divorce, or we're talking about quitting. You're quitting a marriage. You're quitting a job. You're quitting school. You're quitting out on life because of something that controls you so deeply that it's become out of control. And so now you like this dopamine, you like this feeling of happiness that you get, okay? And then you need something to take you down so that you can go to work. This up and down motion is what usually drives people to quit on life. And they look back into the mirror of their souls and they say, what happened? How did I get so lost? Maria, do you know anyone that's been dealing with addictions of any type?
Well, I don't have to go too far. I have a brother that he drinks for many years. He has come down from his drinking, but he still, you know, he still goes out with a friend of him, and you know, they drink and they get together and drink. I mean, they spend time drinking. You know, sometimes, like Tom says, sometimes people and men and women, even women too. There's a woman,
right?
they also drink, and
exactly.
But like he says, there's some things that get a hold of people, and it's hard for them to, you know, to let go of those beers or whatever. And also, he talks about, you know, marriages. You know, sometimes even TV can be, not even, I mean, you don't have to go say the only alcohol, but TV can be a cause or a divorce. Sometimes men, what does men come to do? They come home, they don't even say hi to the wife. Let's put the TV on, let's put the shows, let's put the movies. I mean, what is it now for us now? Now it's movies. I mean, you can go with the movie whenever you feel like it. Forget it. I mean, everything is movies, TV. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
give me. That feeling of I've got to have more.
Is that what life all about? TV and movies?
Yes.
No, life consists of so many things that we listen, like you said, Ms. Babo, we listen to the value of many rich things that we could do, and we wasted it down to only movies and TV and games, and where we can be learning another language. We can go to college, we can go to work, we can spend time with people, we can go to the hospital and visit those that are sick and the hospital. They don't have anybody to come in and say hello to them. We can give a hand to our neighbor to help them. I mean, there's so much we can do, but no, society in Hollywood, no, it's TV shows here and there, and let's have a good time, everybody. Come on, I mean,
really. And most of the time, most people don't even know their neighbors. Most people don't even know their neighbors.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And you know, you would think, you know, when people look at some of us who have been categorized, we've been labeled as disabled. You're labeled as disabled. And it's just a label, and that is all it is. Because
right.
the same, we're human beings, and the same thing that happens to every human being can happen to someone who has mental health issues or physical health issues. And no one really focuses too much on whether someone that is categorized as disabled can have an addiction. Although we have a very high addiction rate in the population, in the culture of disability, and mostly alcohol and pain medications. And we keep taking them and taking them and taking them, trying to reach that level again that we talked about of feeling good inside of our brain. Here's one of the ways that we can address it, and I always speak about this in the classroom, is you've got to first recognize that something is controlling your life. Something. You might not know what it is right away, but you feel uncomfortable. Then when you begin to start going through your life, which many of us don't do, we don't even look in the mirror at ourselves and really look into our own eyes and say, what is it that's going on? Food is a perfect example. You know, what am I doing that's making me feel so sluggish and so uncomfortable? Maybe it's because you ate so much the night before. Or maybe you stayed up so late playing video games or at the casino gambling or online gambling. We have to be able to not only recognize it and then identify the source. Now here comes the hard part. Once we identify the source, then we've got to ask for help. That's difficult. That is challenging, is to ask for help. But if you want to improve your performance at college or work, you're going to have to ask for the help. No one can read your mind.
Another thing about addictions that, at least I'm an alcoholic. I've had 19 years of sobriety, but I've gone to AA meetings. And if you want to see people that are really addicted to coffee and cigarettes, AA meetings are the place to be. A lot of people will trade one addiction for another. And a lot of times, they'll even trade one addiction that's really bad for two that aren't so bad. Because I know I've never seen so much cigarette smoking, chain smoking in my life, and coffee drinking as I saw when I was going to AA meetings. So
yes.
I think it's important when you try to give up an addiction, personally, that you don't try to replace it with another one.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
or
yes.
what have you gained, you know?
Right. Exactly. Go ahead, Maria.
Yeah, but okay, but Tom, but
did
what
you say
you
repeat it?
Hello? Did we lose our technology? Hello? I think we lost our callers for a moment. We're still looking like we're on air. Okay. There you are. There you are. Okay. I think we lost Tom. You'll have to call back in. Okay. But go ahead, Maria. You were going to say something to Tom.
Okay.
And
I was going to say something to Tom. But what did you do when people, I mean, what did they do when people don't recognize the problem? What did they do when they don't feel like they have a problem?
Right, exactly. Now that's a good point, Maria. And I think you said it. You really said you gave the answer just in the question. It is their problem. that's the key. You're on air now, Tom. The point is, I don't know if you heard Maria's question is, what do you do when someone doesn't recognize their addiction? And I'm telling her that the answer is in the question. It is their addiction. And what becomes our addiction is our over-nurturing someone and trying to get them off of an addiction that is their addiction, that is their choice.
And enable.
Right. Then you begin enabling, and enabling means that you begin to stay on their back about quitting and stop gambling, stop snorting this stuff up your nose, stop shooting these drugs. And the only thing you're doing is, it most of the time, is on deaf ears. People don't hear you, okay? And that's not a statement against those who are deaf, because those who are deaf, physically deaf, do hear. They hear a different way. And that's another thing that we want to bring out in the world of disability, is that, we don't want to use terms and not define what we're talking about. And so, but the question is, Marie, your question is very, very important. And many people ask this, especially parents. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter how old their son or daughter is, 25, 35, whatever. It's how can I help them? They're drinking themselves sick. And
so
it's right in front of the kids now.
What is the answer? What can a family do when they have a person, like my family, for instance, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be honest. When my brother would drink, I lived in New York for many years. And,
in New York?
My brother would
drink
in New York. And my brother would come drunk to the house. And it was not easy for me to see those things. I would be nervous. I would not be able to sleep properly the night because I knew that my brother was out there drinking, who knows, driving the car, who knows if we didn't pray, because we would pray for him. You know, I would get up in the morning, get up at night and worry, okay, Lord, help my brother, whatever he's at, protect him, help him, keep him, don't let nothing happen to him, don't let him hurt nobody. And and so many years that I lived with him, and to the point that I'm going to be honest, I you get tired of that life, you get tired of seeing a person don't help themselves, please them, let's go for a place, let's go to church, get help from God. Go to a resource that they can help you, but those people, they don't want to do it. They don't want to do it.
Sometimes, so
what do you have to do? I mean, I have to do what I have to do.
Sometimes. Go ahead.
I honest with you, part of where I am here in Arizona is one of the reasons why did I move out, because
You left
New York. I was getting myself sick because I was getting nervous. I would not sleep right, and I got to the point that I said, "Okay, I'm." It's one of the reasons I'm here is because my brother, we live in our house, and I move out because I got tired of I got tired of his nonsense. Right, my sister moved out of the house. I moved out of the house. She got married. I moved on my own here. And my mother is dealing with that, but it's really hard to have somebody like that and you don't have no answers, okay? No answers.
Yes, we have many people that are dealing with this issue. And what happens is people become addicted to helping others, the attachment that they have to another person becomes addictive in itself. You agree, Tom?
Yeah, I do. That's what That's what I meant by enabling. When I used to drink, when I first started, before I decided drinking really heavy, I drank for years before that. I could persuade my wife to buy me the alcohol. And then when I decided to quit, she stopped doing it. And frankly, she threatened to divorce me if I didn't stop drinking. For me, that was enough. Many women, if they told that to their alcoholic husband, might end up, you know, having to get the divorce if they mean it. But the problem is we can't make other people quit their addictions. They have to want to themselves. And sometimes we actually make it easier for them. Sometimes the wife will call in on Monday for the husband who's drunk all weekend and too drunk to go to work.
Right.
And that's the worst thing you can do. Sometimes the best thing you can do is just kick all the crutches out from under the attic and make him go squirming on his own. And if it gets bad enough, he'll solve the problem itself. He'll say, whoa, I can't do this anymore. It's going to get me fired from my job. I'd better do something to quit, in this case, drinking, so that I can stay working.
One of the things that's wonderful about our show, Student to Teacher, and we have about 8 minutes remaining on the show, is that you're hearing from people who have experienced many of the things that we talk about. The topics are designed from listening to students that we have worked with and that come to us with many of the problems that we discuss on the show. If you have anything that you think is really important that you'd like to discuss and hear some comments from our staff or other listeners, please make sure that you contact us at the blogtalkradio.com/student-to-teacher or go to our website, WhiteAppleInstitute.org, all together, WhiteAppleInstitute.org. And you can leave us a message, and we would appreciate being able to support you. We are a totally volunteer organization. We all, the staff volunteers their time, and so we work totally by donation. You can send that in to us at White Apple Institute. And the address is on our website, but for those of you who may not be looking at a computer right now, our address is 701 South Dobson Road, number 431, Mesa, Arizona. And that's 85202. And if you need that information again, feel free to call 480-471-8082. That's 480-471-8082. Before we go back to the show, and we're giving others some time to get their thoughts together, and hopefully we can close with a very positive statement, I want to thank our sponsors. We want to thank White Apple Institute and the staff for always being available to put on this radio show so that we can reach out globally across the world and let people hear what's going on and how we can all help each other and get to a better place. Humanity overall get to a better place. I thank you and wish you much love and peace. And I'm hoping that you'll encourage not only myself as Professor Applewhite, but others in our staff by writing in to us and giving your comments. We receive a lot of comments in, and that's what keeps us going, makes us get on the show every Saturday morning is that we can, without technical problems, and at least broadcast out. So before we leave, I want to tell you the surprise situation that I've been mentioning throughout the show. And that is that now, and this is according to an article in Time magazine, that in Time magazine, addiction has now been called a form of mental illness. Now, I know that's shocking to many of you, but a form of mental illness. Now, when you think about that, that's just really serious. If you'd like to know more about the information from Time Magazine and where we got that from, just, again, connect with us. And you can always hear this show, again, in archives. Just keep, go into the Blog Talk Radio and click on the show, Part 2, Using Drugs to Feel Good About School and Work. We want you to increase your performance, don't we, listeners? Anybody have anything they'd like to close the show with?
Well, it's just important. This is Tom. It's just important to remember that the only person who's addicted that can stop being addicted is the addict themselves. They have to make up their mind. They no longer want to be addicted and take steps. There are agencies to help them, like Alcoholics Anonymous Association for Alcohol and Cocaine Anonymous. And there are agencies that can help them stop. But they have to want to stop, and they have to make up their minds they're going to stop and try to stop. Mm-hmm. We can't make them stop.
That's right. Absolutely. And I know as a fact that there are resources in some of the most impoverished communities around the world that even though it may not be the greatest clinical environment, and sometimes there's paint peeling off the walls in some of these places, but there's an individual there who wants to help you. And the reason why these things happen when we don't have a good mental health or physical health system to deal with addiction is because of the fact that it keeps on occurring over and over again because people do not follow and use the resources. And so, therefore, the money that is allotted or given to communities is not used correctly. We've got about 2 minutes left. We've got one other caller online maybe to help us close the show. You're on air, and this is Professor Applewhite. Good morning.
I'd rather not talk. I'd rather not talk.
Okay.
I haven't listened enough to know what it's about.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate that. Who is this calling in? That's all right. You don't even have to answer that right now. We just appreciate that you've been part of listening to the show this morning. Thank you for your support. We appreciate that. And we hope in some way that we've helped you to recognize that whoever you're calling about, whether it's yourself or someone else, that this is very serious, that addiction is now being called a form of mental illness, because what we're saying is that it is actually controlling our lives so much. It is controlling our lives so much that we're not able to perform at school and work the way we want to. And we hope and pray that those of you out there that are in need of someone to speak with, to please contact White Apple Institute, either through the organization on website at whiteappleinstitute.org, or feel free to call us. We have 60 seconds left on the show, and we want to close with saying that we are here for you. If you want to support us, send your donations in and support our work. We also want to say that when we say much love and peace, we really do mean it from the bottom of our hearts. We thank you all for listening. We're so proud of over 5,000 people listening to our show, and we have not advertised or anything, just word of mouth. So somewhere along the line, God wants this message to get out. And we thank you so much. Thank you, caller, for calling in. Goodbye and have a very, very beautiful week. We look forward to hearing from you.